Vincent Kennedy's vision was a complete 180 from his father's company. Vince wanted mainstream attention, and he needed a star who embodied the essence. His choice was a man from Florida who was billed from Venice Beach, California.
Weighing 320 pounds, Hulk Hogan!
Hogan had been a star in other promotions, namely the AWA based in Minneapolis. But after gaining mainstream popularity from his role in the movie Rocky III, Hogan made his way to WWE, and McMahon knew he had struck gold.
The date was the 23rd of January, 1984, and it was Hulk Hogan going up against the Iron Sheik. And the joint was crazy, and I had a feeling the fans knew something big was about to erupt. That's the night it all started. Hulk Hogan becoming the champion, Madison Square Garden going nuts.
There was no doubt that when you had Hulk Hogan as the headliner in a Madison Square Garden, those events were selling out.
I feel no pain, I fear no man.
Everyone in our area knew about Bruno or Backlund and stuff like that, but when Hogan came along, next thing you know, he's on Johnny Carson or he's on David Letterman. He's just everywhere.
We came to Saturday Night Live for one reason, brother. This is the best darn show in the whole wild world.
He was getting a push that was unreal. He was also charismatic enough to carry the load. Not one of the greatest workers in the business, but very charismatic, very talented.
You know, they created the Hulk as a monster, and the monster he became, and he carried it excellent, brother. Nobody could have carried it any better. All the respect in the world goes to him.
Hulk Hogan for many years carried that championship banner of WWE and was just the icon of WWE.
Believed in the four commandments of the training, the prayers, the vitamins, and believed in ourselves.
My hero, your hero, everybody's hero.
The character of Hulk Hogan is impeccable. It always has been. There are no holes in this character at all. The Hulk Hogan character has brought me, Terry Bollea, up and made me a much better person.
Hulk Hogan wouldn't be Hulk Hogan without WWE, but I don't think WWE would be where it is today without Hulk Hogan. It was just that kind of relationship.
Vince furnished the brains and he furnished the brawn. I mean, one couldn't have done without the other.
And Hulkamania will live forever! All
right. When we say Hulkamania will live forever, it's immortal. I want that to be true. That'd be really cool, man, if people woke up and realize the positive stuff really does work in the long run. That would be a hell of a legacy to leave behind.
Your entertainment and your network. This is Rant EM Media.
Remember, what this network wants, this network gets. I promise you that.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event of the evening.
Broadcasting live from Shaolin, Staten Island.
Freak Show Central.
Where's that?
New York City.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. It's the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast on Rant EM Radio. Proud member of the Shining Wizards Network.
Hey episode 512 of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, your ever-so-gracious host for now 13 years, the Yoda of yesteryear, the Messiah of memories, the heavyweight primate, the old Burrow King, pack player, Mr. Philly Ray, and I would love to be recording this on better circumstances, but no, of course not. I wasn't planning on doing an episode this week. I wasn't planning on doing an episode for a couple of weeks. I was just not inspired. However, things happen, and you know, I tried really hard to be good in terms of what I was going to post, in terms of you know, my feelings towards what went down this week. First with Ozzy passing, and you guys all know how I feel about Ozzy and Sabbath, so that was weighing heavy on me because of the influence he had on me throughout my life. And as I'm trying to, you know, navigate through all the memorials, and I'm getting text messages and phone calls, people checking in like it was a relative, which I appreciate, Hulk Hogan dies. The greatest performer of all time. And I say that not comparing him to my greatest performer, but he is. Hulk Hogan dying at 71 years old. Cardiac arrest is the cause of death. What brought that on? Could be anything. I'm sure the autopsy will come back if they're going to reveal what happened. You could probably guess what happened for guys his age and guy what he did for life and his, you know, for his career. I don't have a lot of patience when it comes to the internet lately. And I made a video last night on my way out after work because people were posting their disdain for people giving Hulk Hogan a farewell, like a friendly farewell or love, and showing him love on, you know, whatever the case may be, right? Because of the stuff that he did in the last several years of his life. And I refrained from saying anything to these people, you know, because you have a right to your opinion. You know, let's be honest here. Everybody's, you know, now you have these platforms and everybody can say what they want. And people genuinely don't like the man for a plethora of reasons. Whether it was the racist remarks that he made that were recorded a couple of years ago and released. Whether it was the Bubba the Love Sponge thing. Now, Bubba the Love Sponge thing really bothered me because this guy 3 weeks ago went on the air on his radio show and basically tore up Hulk Hogan in terms of, well, you know, he's on his deathbed and he's on his way out. It's grim. And Hogan's camp kept denying it. Like, there's nothing wrong. Hogan said nothing. The camp denied it. This went on for a couple. And this guy kept going on the air, doing it. Nothing. For 3 weeks, they're saying he's dying. And the camp's denying it. They're booking the. There was one point, there was a press release with Hogan and Bischoff for some wrestling promotion they were going to start. Hogan was promoting his beer. Nothing was mentioned about him being sick. And then a couple of days before he died, Jimmy Hart goes on social media and says, Hogan can't speak. Hogan's not well. It's grim. Blah, 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 blah. Still didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. And here we are. He passed away, sadly, yesterday. And we're going to dedicate this episode to him, and we're going to give him his flowers. And, yeah, he probably was a terrible human being, okay? And, yeah, he did some terrible stuff. Let's be fair here. You can't not acknowledge what he's done for pro wrestling. You can't. I don't care what kind of fan you are, how old of a fan you are, how young of a fan you are. You cannot deny what this man has done in terms of professional wrestling. He brought it to the mainstream. Him and Vince McMahon, they literally started sports entertainment. The same way Ozzy inadvertently started heavy metal. Okay? Visionaries. Hogan saw an opportunity, went with Vince, took advantage, and here we are. Now, you could say anything you want about the man, right? This is strictly for wrestling. I personally can differentiate the performer from the person. I did it with Chris Benoit. I did it with a couple of folks that were not nice people in real life. You know? Well, I mean, it's not fair, almost. As I'm watching SummerSlam 89, everybody in the ring is dead except for Beefcake. Sad, sad. But yeah, I digress. The thing was, for me anyway, I can't lower myself to do that. And I wasn't a big fan of Hulk Hogan. You guys all know that. Okay, I did as a kid, I rooted for the heels. They just looked better. They dressed better. They had better music. They had managers, better managers. I did like some of the faces, you know, like especially with the tag teams, but like the bad guys just appealed to me. It had nothing to do with Hulk Hogan personally. I just didn't like him, okay? As a kid, you know, I bought the LJN just to have his championship belt so I can put it on Paul Orndorff's waist. Even though the Paul Orndorff figure was absolutely atrocious. Was absolutely atrocious because all it did was flex, you know. I'd be remiss if I didn't, as a nostalgia wrestling podcast, not give Hulk Hogan his flowers, okay? So in the beginning of this, you heard a tribute of some sort. We're not gonna do a traditional break tonight. We'll take a break, but then I'm gonna play several minutes of Hulk Hogan's title wins. I was gonna do a whole bunch of clips, and I'm like, you know what? I would probably need at least a two-parter for that. You know, I would need a two-parter for that. So right now, maybe we'll revisit it if I get a co-host or something like that. We'll go back and visit Hulk Hogan's career. But I mean, there's a lot to absorb here, you know. And I just remember as a kid getting so excited about the opening of Saturday Night Wrestling for me on Channel 9. Because the highlight was them showing Hulk Hogan pinning Iron Sheik within the title. I just got into it like right before that happened. So at the tail end of Backlund having the championship and the Sheik beating him, that's when I became a fan of wrestling. But you know, just hearing Hulk Hogan's music, and you know, it was Eye of the Tiger, and this is before Real American. They used copyrighted music. He used Eye of the Tiger by Survivor, famous for the Rocky movies. And, you know, other guys used music too, like that, you know. JYD used Another One Bites the Dust. Obviously, the Freebirds used Freebird. Devon Erichs, I think, used Rush for a while. A lot of wrestlers used music, you know. Jimmy Garvin used Sharp Dressed Man. I remember that. Road Warriors obviously used Iron Man. That's how I got into Black Sabbath. But I digress. Now, Hogan passed away a couple of weeks before his 72nd birthday. He was born Terry Jean Bollea, August 13th, 1953. He started in 1977. He was born in Georgia. Raised in Tampa, Florida, he was in a band called Ruckus. He was a bass player, and he was like the house band for this bar that the wrestlers used to hang out in. And one night, he meets Gerald and Jack Briscoe, the famous Briscoe brothers, not the Briscoe brothers you see now, but the original Briscoe brothers. And they see this strapping young man who's almost 6'6", 6'7", 260, 280, probably 300 pounds at that point. He was a big boy. And, you know, he was a 20-something-year-old, and he wanted to get into the business, and they did it. They got him in. They got him. They brought him down to, you know, where Florida Championship Wrestling was, Championship Wrestling from Florida, and he was trained by the legendary Hiro Matsuda. You don't know who Hiro Matsuda is, please look him up. He trained B. Brian Blair, Bob Orton Jr., Dick Slater, Hercules. He had some training with Mike Graham, Eddie Graham's son, Paul Orndorff, the great Ricky Choshu, Lex Luger, Ron Simmons, Scott Hall, Scott Casey, Ted DiBiase, and he even had a hand in training the great Muda. So Matsuda was known for his training prowess, right? While training Hogan, he breaks Hogan's leg. Story goes that he breaks Hogan's leg, but did it almost on purpose, like trying to stretch him out and beat on him a little bit. And they figured he wouldn't come back. Comes back 2.5 months later and gets booked for his first match in Championship Wrestling from Florida against B. Brian Blair. Things started to progressively go quickly for Hogan as he wore a mask covering for the great Don Jardine as the Super Destroyer. So that was, I mean, he was a presence. He was a big dude, you know? So that gave him some, I don't want to say notoriety, but it gave him a little bit of, I don't know, what's the word I want to use? Not notoriety. Maybe I'm using the word notoriety. But he quickly moved on to the more southern territories, Alabama and Tennessee. And then he was in Memphis for a while. And for CWA, for more money, obviously. It was there that he was on some local talk show, sitting next to the great Lou Ferrigno. And the host said that Hogan was 6'7", weighed 300 pounds, with 24-inch biceps, which Hogan kept using for most of his career. And then he took the moniker of Sterling Golden, one of my favorite wrestling names of all time, Sterling Golden. That is just classic pro wrestling 101, taking somebody's looks and making a name out of it. See, Sterling Golden, which he used in Georgia also. Everyone laughed at me when I said it was a genius name, by the way. Everybody laughed at me. I don't care. I like it. December, now it's just like 2 years in. December of 79, he wins his first singles title. He wins the NWA Southeastern Heavyweight Championship. It's the Northern Division of Alabama and Tennessee, those territories. Back then, the regional belts had regional belts. The NWA had a belt for every region, for every promotion. Excuse me. Sorry. He beat the legendary Bob Roop, by the way. Lost it to Bullet Bob Armstrong. And then he was introduced to Vince Sr. by none other than the former World Heavyweight Champion, Terry Funk, who he wound up having a really good feud with when Funk made it to the WWF. So Vince Sr. wanted to give him an Irish name and dye his hair red, and Hogan was already losing his hair, and Hogan's like, no, I'll keep the Irish name, but I'll be an Irish blonde. So Hogan was the first, and he becomes Hulk Hogan. Made his WWF debut in 1979, I think it was November of that year. He beats jobber Harry Valdez. And then at that point, he's still bouncing around with Bama and Tennessee and Georgia. He made his Madison Square Garden debut in December of that year, beating Ted DiBiase with a bear hug. I wish I had footage of that match. After the match, Hogan thanked DiBiase for putting him over. and repaid him for that favor later on during DiBiase's second run in the WWF. So that relationship lasted a long time because DiBiase did come back and had a very good career in the WWE, right? WWF. He did get several title shots against then-champion Bob Backlund. And then quickly started feuding with Andre the Giant as he's a heel, which led to the Shea Stadium match, the showdown, the big Shea Stadium card from 1980, which Hogan and Andre, they didn't main event. Pretty sure they co-headlined that. I have to look at the card again. And then at that point, he was managed by the Fashion Plate himself, Classy Freddie Blassie. You pencil neck geeks. Around this time, Hogan does get booked in New Japan Pro Wrestling under the moniker Ichiban. If you don't know what Ichiban means, it means one number one, the number one, or your number one. Making his debut in May of 1980, he did a full tour wrestling guys like Tatsumi Fujinami, Abdul the Butcher, and this is where he learned how to wrestle. If you watch anything out of Hulk Hogan wrestling, in Japan, he wrestled, and he wrestled well, okay? He wrestled well. He adopted one of my favorite moves, which is the Axe Bomber, which is basically a crooked lariat with your hands crossed. It's a cool move. It's an Axe Bomber. I love that move, you know? While he's doing that, he's still a heel in WWF, and he's challenging then-IC champ Pedro Morales back in the States, but he came up short. We all know what happens in Japan with Hogan in 1983. He becomes the first IWGP Heavyweight Champion. He wins the tournament. He holds the early version of that title, defeating Antonio Inoki by knockout, ironically, in the finals. It was a 10-man tournament. And then Inoki and Hogan did work as a tag team in Japan, winning the MSG Tag League Tournament 2 years in a row, 82 and 83. He does go back in 84 to defend the title, but he loses it to, I think, Ricky Choshu. But then Hogan, while he was champion, he defends the WWF Championship in Japan against Sakaguchi, Fujinami, and all of the like top guys at the time in New Japan Pro Wrestling. So, you know, but the tour was successful enough where he's getting some notoriety. So shortly before anything happens with that, he comes back to the States and he's offered the role of Thunder Lips in Rocky III. The Ultimate Male, by the way. That's probably one of my favorite action figures. If you've never seen Rocky III, which is my favorite, please go watch it. He got a derby hat, and he's got the big, you know, he's got the big robe and, you know, stuff like that, right? So, he was... Vince Sr. did not approve of the movie role and released Hogan. Hogan goes to the AWA. Obviously ran by Vern Gagne. But Hogan was there for a while. In 81, he started his AWA run there. It goes back. He was with Luscious Johnny Valiant. But the AWA fans, they loved Hogan. He became a fan favorite in AWA at one point. And battling Bobby Heenan's family and Nick Bockwinkel, the face turn comes in July of 81. Jerry Blackwell loses a match to Brad Riggins. Continues to get beat down when Hulk Hogan makes the save. Feuding with Blackwell, eventually getting World Heavyweight title shots against Nick Bockwinkel. In March of 82, before the movie... My timeline's getting a little wobbly. But Hogan does defeat Bockwinkel and his manager, Bobby Heenan, in a non-title handicap match at the amphitheater in Chicago. Hogan went on to repeatedly challenge Bockwinkel for the title, with matches generally ending in DQs, a decision, that just, I don't know why that happened, actually, you know. In April of 82, Hogan defeats Bockwinkel and was declared the heavyweight champion, only to be overturned by AWA President Stanley Blackburn due to the use of a foreign object during the match. Hogan gets mad, has a falling out with Vern Gagne, because Vern wants, guys were selling their own shirts at that point. And Vern wanted some cut of the t-shirts. Hogan said no. And, and he didn't like him doing the movie either, and whatever. So he leaves. Hogan does leave, and he quits via a letter he sends to Vern Gagne. That's how it goes. Gagne thought it was a rib, actually. But then Hogan not showing up, you know, that's what happens. Hogan does make his WWF return in December of 83. At that point, Rocky's already done. He defeats a jobber, Bill Dixon. On January 7th, his face turn comes by saving Bob Backlund in a three-way assault by the Samoans. Hogan's turn was explained by Bob Backlund, saying he changed his ways. He's a great man. He's told me he's not going to be Blassie. He's not going to have Blassie around anymore. And the storyline was cut short 3 weeks later. Hogan wins the WWF Championship. January 23rd, 1984, Madison Square Garden. Pinning the Iron Sheik. Storyline was the victory was a last-minute replacement for the Sheik's original opponent, Bob Backlund. Hogan became because Backlund became the first champion, by the way, be the first man to escape the camel clutch. And Hogan, well, then Hogan does it. Well, was it Hogan who broke out of the clutch the first time? I don't know. It doesn't matter. But then the great Gorilla Monsoon, does the moniker, you know, Hulkamania is here. But Hulkamania was a thing, though, man. Hulkamania was a thing in AWA, you know. I don't think they give the AWA enough credit. You know, these promotions back in the day had some serious talent, had old school promoters, had their own TV deals, and just didn't want to conform to the bigger picture that Vince had. This is the birth of sports entertainment. You know, the whole say your prayers and eat your vitamins and train and you know, it got so big that, you know, there was a deal had to be made between Titan Sports, which was WWF's company name, and Marvel Comics, where they had the trademarks, the Hulk Hogan, Hulkster, Hulkamania, for like 20 years. Titan agreed to no longer refer to him as the Incredible Hulk Hogan, or simply Hulk, or ever to dress him in purple or green. That was the deal. This was legitimate, by the way. Marvel also subsequently received 9% of reportable gross of the merchandise revenue associated with Hogan, and $100 for each of his matches, and 10% of Titan's portion of the other earnings under his name, if Titan held no interest. This extended to WCW, and we'll get to WCW after the break. When Turner merged with Time Warner and became sister companies they became sister companies with Marvel Marvel's rivals DC. Hogan as well, and did the whole Hollywood Hogan thing, and to avoid the Time Warner awkward thing, so they worked all that out, you know. So this is, I call this the golden era of sports entertainment, 85 to 88. And at that point, I was going to the shows every month at Madison Square Garden. I was seeing Hulk Hogan headline almost every month. And by the time 85 came, Hogan's now the face of wrestling. And this is like propelled into pop culture. More importantly, with the rock and wrestling connection on MTV, it was an event that was for Madison Square Garden. It was broadcast on MTV, and this was the prelude to WrestleMania, and it had Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper, Mr. T gets involved, Paul Orndorff, Cowboy Bob Orton, and that leads to the WrestleMania match. It was the Hulk Hogan and Mr. T against Paul Orndorff and Roddy Piper, Bob Orton in their corner, Jimmy Snuka was in Hogan's corner, and it's so weird. I know I keep saying this, but just imagine if Snuka didn't kill his girlfriend and Hogan stayed in the Midwest. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Jimmy Snuka? I don't know if Jimmy Snuka could be the face of pro wrestling. I don't know if that would have been pulled off. But he was the top. He was the next guy in line to beat Bob Backlund, not the Iron Sheik. I could tell you that. Or he was, maybe he was supposed to be the Sheik. I don't know. But either way, he was the top guy before he decided to kill his girlfriend and get away with it. Subsequently, he didn't. But we did that podcast already. But so that happens. You know, and I mean, you know, this turned into Saturday Night's main event. The first one, Hogan fights Bob Orton. I remember that very well, actually. I remember being so excited, sneaking out of my grandmother's bed because I was sleeping there on the weekends, and I'd sneak into the living room and put it on because I was little, and SNL gets preempted, and I was so excited, like. You would think it was live, but it wasn't. Like, you know, we preempt Saturday Night Live for a special presentation, and it's wrestling at 11:30 at night. You're like, this is the greatest, man. 11 o'clock, 11:30. This is the greatest this is the best. Before John Cena, Hogan was the most requested celebrity for the Make a Wish. By the way, he was also the first person to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Saturday Night's main event moves on. The second one, he defeats Nikolai Volkov in a flag match. He meets Roddy Piper again in a title match. I saw this match at least five times. The one you see at the Wrestling Classic, the tournament, Hogan fights Piper for the title, and then Junkyard Dog wins the Rolls-Royce tournament, right, the Wrestling Classic. That match between Hogan and Piper, they did that match like five times in the Garden. It was crazy. But Hogan does win, again by DQ. Piper would win sometimes. It was crazy. Hogan, this is now 85 into 86. Hogan defends his title against everybody. Terry Funk, I mentioned before. Don Morocco. Of course, my favorite WrestleMania of all time. He defeats King Kong Bundy in a cage. Paul Orndorff, the greatest heel turn of all time. Hercules. And of course, he dons a mask in the fall of 86 and becomes one of the machines. He becomes the Hulk machine, which was amazing. And then now it's 1987, WrestleMania 3. McMahon's got two in his pocket already. He is on all cylinders, books the Pontiac Silverdome. And what does he do? Turns Andre heel. To subsequently pass the torch to Hogan. Andre was pretty ill at this point, pretty beat up. Turned heel on Piper's Pit. I will never ever forget that. Well, Andre comes out with Bobby Heenan and challenges Hogan for a title match. Rips his shirt off his chest. Hogan had a chain on, and when Andre ripped it, it cut him. And Hogan was bleeding, and Piper's like, "You're bleeding," you know. But yeah, that was the match. It was Andre was undefeated for 15 years. Hogan was given a trophy for being the world champion for 3 years consecutively. Just pissed off Andre. But Hogan was at that point. So Hogan beats Andre, and let's talk about this for a second. I did not expect Hogan to win. 12-year-old Phil was like, no way. This can't happen. I told my WrestleMania 3 story a million times on how I got to see it that day. But no way. He's not winning. Blah, blah, blah. And I was all hell-bent. How can Andre lose? He hasn't lost in 15 years. How is he losing this match? And Hogan becomes the superhero that he proved to the world that he always was. And he goes and he defeats Andre the Giant. The big slam heard around the world. Beats him. Hogan at that point, now it's 88. Hogan's been champion for 4 years, almost 1,500 days. But this comes to an end. 33 million people watched the Saturday Night's Main Event when Hogan lost to Andre as his championship belt. It's on my mantle. There was the convoluted scam involving Ted DiBiase, Earl Hebner, Dave Hebner. We did an episode of that on Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Andre delivered the belly-to-belly on Hogan. Hebner counts the pain while Hogan's shoulder was clearly off the mat. After the match, Hogan is in distress. Andre hands title over to DiBiase to complete their business deal. As a result, the championship gets vacant for the first time in its 25-year history. And on the take, President Jack Tunney decreed that the championship could not be sold from one wrestler to another, which gets put up for a tournament in WrestleMania 4. Hogan and Andre are in the tournament, but they're given byes to the quarterfinals, but their match results in a double disqualification. So later that night in the main event, Hogan comes out to ringside to stop Andre from interfering, which helped Macho Man beat DiBiase in the finals to win the title. Hogan, Savage, and his manager, Miss Elizabeth, formed the partnership known as the Mega Powers. Yeah, the former moniker of the first co-host of the show. Okay, yeah, see, I gave him his flowers. Stop your bitching, all right? After Savage became the WWF champion at WrestleMania 4, they fought the Mega Bucks at the very first SummerSlam, August 27, 1988. I was there. I did that episode, too. They beat Andre and DiBiase with the Elizabeth showing off her stuff. They went on to feud with the Twin Towers. Then Hogan, Baz actually put this picture up yesterday. Hogan wears this war helmet bonnet looking thing. This is red and yellow gladiator helmet with a fist shaped crest out of it. It was notably used to give Bad News Brown his first loss at Madison Square Garden. I was there for that. Before it was discarded altogether, the Mega Powers begin to implode. Savage is jealous of Hulk Hogan's, paranoid, says he has lust in his eyes. Yeah. They break up at the Royal Rumble in 89. Hogan eliminates Savage from the Rumble, eliminating Bad News Brown. That causes tension to only be eliminated by the Twin Towers. In 89, they broke up while wrestling the Twin Towers at the second main event, Saturday Night's Main Event. They called it the main event. It was like the second version of Saturday's main event. Savage accidentally collides with Miss Elizabeth during the match. Hogan takes advantage, goes backstage to give Liz medical attention, and that erupts, you know. And then that sets up WrestleMania. What WrestleMania was that? That's five now. Five. Hogan beat Savage for a second championship. His second run in 89 lasted a year. He defended the title twice against Savage. He also defeated the Big Boss Man in a cage match, Saturday Night's Main Event 11, which aired in May 27th of 89 on WWF on NESN, New England Sports Network. Hogan retained the title by losing once again by a countout against Savage. This also set up the last time the World Championship was referred to. This was the last time the WWF World Heavyweight Championship was referred to as such during a televised title defense. Hogan's next title defense was against the Honky Tonk Man. Titles being renamed the WWF Championship. Hogan's second reign as champion. He took a break, started No Holds Barred. He was Rip. This was the inspiration of a feud with his then co-star, Tom Lister. You know him as Zeus. Remember Zeus? And that sets up SummerSlam 89, which I just watched with Hogan and Beefcake versus Zeus and Macho Man. God, was Zeus terrible. But he had a look, though, right? Let's see. I'm just going to skip. I have a bunch of notes here. Hogan defeats Savage to retain the championship again in their official WrestleMania rematch in October at a UK show. It was their first UK show in London. Okay. Of course, then he loses the title in 1990 to Ultimate Warrior. Hogan becomes embroiled in a big feud with the 470-pound Earthquake, crushes his ribs on the Brother Love show, sets up SummerSlam there. Hogan returns by SummerSlam. He fights Sergeant Slaughter, who's in 91, who's now the champion, and an Iraqi sympathizer. Desert Storm is in full effect. Interesting story there. If you could listen to what happens with Sergeant Slaughter, he thanks Hogan to this day for making him a ton of money. you know, this goes back and forth. Hogan loses the title. Well, he's challenged by Ric Flair, who recently came into the WWF in 91. Challenge went unmet. Hogan lost the championship to The Undertaker at Survivor Series. Jack Tunney grants an immediate rematch because Flair helps. Flair helps him, and Jack Tunney does the rematch for the Tuesday in Texas. Hogan wins it 6 days later. Flair interfered in both matches, and due to the controversy, the championship was again declared vacant. It was decided that the winner of the '92 Rumble, which was the greatest Rumble of all time, The winner of the Rumble will be the new champion. Hogan enters as number 26, but failed to regain the championship. He was eliminated by friend Sid Justice. In turn, Hogan causes Sid to get eliminated, leaving Flair, who's the champion. Hogan and Sid patch things up. They team together on Saturday's main event against Flair and Taker. But during the match, Sid abandons Hogan, starting their feud for WrestleMania 8. Hogan defeats Sid via DQ. Due to interference by Sid's manager, Harvey Wimpleman, Hogan was attacked by Papa Shango and then was saved by the returning Ultimate Warrior. And here's where things get interesting. Around this time, there was a news report began that leaked that alleged that Dr. George Zahorian, a doctor for the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission, had been selling steroids illegally to wrestlers in general and Hogan in particular. Hogan appears on the Arsenio Hall show, denies allegations, and due to all the scrutiny, of course, Hogan now takes leave of absence. He returns in February of 93, helping out his friend Brutus Beefcake in a feud with Money Inc. They're the Mega Maniacs, taking on Money Inc. With Money Inc.'s former manager, Jimmy Hart, who's now a face manager. That's WrestleMania 9. That was the first Outdoor Mania. That was Jim Ross's debut. They lose the match, but Hogan comes out. He gets injured. He gets a cut above his left eye. Hogan had an eye injury. In storyline, DiBiase allegedly paying a group of thugs to take Hogan out. Later that night, Hogan wins his fifth championship, pinning the mighty Yokozuna in an impromptu match moments after Yoko had just had defeated Bret Hart. So Hogan reportedly used his influence there again. And this is where people in the business start talking about how Hogan's has this stroke, okay? In the first ever King of the Ring pay-per-view of June of that year, Hogan defends the championship in a rematch against Yoko. It was Hogan's first and only title defense since defeating Yoko. Yoko kicks out of the signature leg drop and scored a pinfall after Hogan was blinded by a quote-unquote Japanese photographer. It was actually Harvey Whippleman in disguise, but I won't, you didn't hear that from me. Of course, Yoko does give Hogan the bonsai drop. This is Hogan's last pay-per-view appearance. on WWE, WWF programming until 2002. He and Jimmy Hart lead the promotion. Hogan does feud with Yokozuna until August of that year, though. And then Hogan sat out his contract, which expired. One of Hogan's best matches of the 90s came on May 3rd, 1993. He returns to New Japan, and this is when he was still champion. And he fights the Great Muta, who was IWGP champion at the time, at the annual Dantaku event. Hogan wrestled against Muta under his real name, Keiji Muto. And then in September, Hogan wrestled again against the Hellraisers with Muta and Masachono as his tag team partners. His last match in Japan was January 4th of 94 at Battlefield when he defeated Tetsumi Fujinami. So that sums up Hulk Hogan's WWF run. So from 83 to 93, for 10 years, Hulk Hogan was the man. You know, and at this point, the pro wrestling, I don't want to say takes a nosedive in terms of popularity, but you could see the lines are being very blurred. Okay, and I'll paint the picture for you. Vince wants to go another direction, obviously. So Hogan's fading out. They're going to do the Bret Hart era, right? This is Bret Hart's time now, apparently. He's going to be the top guy. And they're grooming Shawn Michaels as well. Undertaker is there. You know, they got new guys there. New blood, they called it. WCW is in flux. They, you know, they're just holding on. They're still a regional promotion. After the Turner acquisition in 91, they, I don't want to say stay stagnant, but nothing really, you know, I mean, Flair goes back. Vader is there. Sting is still popular as ever. Luger's over as well. But then in 1993, this little promotion in Philadelphia starts getting a little buzz too. Eastern Championship Wrestling. They're part of the the NWA. East Coast, Northeast NWA. And we all know what happens there. It becomes extreme. So it's a really rough time in terms of wrestling because, like, you know, all these companies going in different directions and trying to stay relevant as the 90s are like the early 90s, like the country is just on a buzz. We just finished Desert Storm and the politics here are crazy. I was just about graduating high school at this point, so I was just in, you know, I was a 18, 19-year-old kid, almost 20, and I was just living life, loving wrestling. I actually started going to indie shows at that point because, you know, they really didn't have promotions back then, really. They would just have, like, these promoters, like these boxing promoters, like locally in New York and New Jersey, and they would just bring like old timey wrestlers back, like, hey, Tito Santana is gonna fight the Warlord, or, you know, or like they would like groom like these job guys who wrestled on TV as job guys, and now they're like big deals in their hometown, and they bring Jimmy Snuka in for a weekend run in like Allentown, Pennsylvania, you know. So that was fun, working like two jobs, just supporting my my wrestling habit, and it was pretty cool. So, all right, so June of 94, you know what happens, but we're going to take a break, and we're going to take a break right now, and I'm going to play this clip of Hogan's All His Titles, which goes into the next phase of his career, which I'll go into right now. After this break. So you're listening to the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, episode, I think, 512, our tribute to Hulkamania, and we'll be right back.
Only the immense power of the Hulk could save him.
shape. He's got to reach down inside for that little something extra. Look at, he's powering his way up. He's made it through its knees. That takes the effect away from the hole. Hulk Hogan now stands up with a Sheik and rams it into the top turnbuckle.
Fans are going wild, and I'm so excited. I don't even want to talk. I want to watch the match.
Sheik going up. Hulk Hogan, he drops a big leg on him. He's down for the cover. Hook the leg. One, two. He got him.
If he hits this gorilla, it's over. Pukemania will die right here.
Savage perched up there in the elbow.
He got it.
He nailed him.
He got it. Cover him, match.
One, two, no. The Hulkster's out of there. Look,
I don't believe this.
That adrenaline is starting to flow. This place is going crazy.
New WWE.
Fuji says he'll put the WWF title on the line right now.
Come on, let's go. You got any guts? Let's do it. Come on.
Mr. Fuji has said that they will put the WWF title on the line.
Okay, Bruce told him to go. Go get him. Do it, Hogan.
Do it.
The challenge.
Bret Hart's telling Hogan to go for it. He said go for it, big man. Hulk Hogan's in the
ring. Ding, ding.
The crowd wants him to go for it. But now Fuji reaching back into his kimono there. And he's got more of the salt or whatever. All in the eyes of Yokozuna. Hogan knocks Fuji down. Hogan looked close down. And down goes Yokozuna. Hogan drops away. Hogan in the cover.
No.
Hooks to the head. And Hogan. Hulk Hogan.
I can't believe this.
Hulk Hogan.
Hey, no matter what's going on here.
Hulk Hogan has won the title.
The winner of this bout and new World Wrestling Federation champion, Hulk
shot.
Oh, I've seen this. I've seen this so many times, Shivani. The Hulkster on his knees. Watch. He'll set the head moving. He'll get the hair shaking. He's got the adrenaline. Hulkamania's alive.
It's just Hogan and Flair. Jerry's gone. Mr. T, make sure of that. Down goes Flair.
Hogan is still going. He is still going.
The big butt.
Oh, no. Please, no.
The leg drop.
Oh, no, please. I'll do anything.
One.
No.
Two.
Shaquille O'Neal in the ring with the Hulkster as he has done it again.
Hulk Hogan throws right hand to the top of the head.
Yeah, and the more blows he throws in the head, he'll take the steam out of the giant.
I don't know about, look at the strength.
Well, he's got to do that. He's got to get up on his haunches.
Come on, giant. Not facing the giant. As a matter of fact, the giant is hulking up on Hulk Hogan.
I never saw this happen.
Look at this.
Before in my life.
It's a little bit of Hulk Hogan medicine.
Yeah, turn around and deal.
Yes. How about this?
No, they're...
He's throwing it right back at Hulk Hogan's face. Shake your finger. Oh, there you go. Backhand chop. And again, the giant sends Hulk Hogan the big foot.
Got him with a big foot. Will he drop a big leg on him?
This is vintage Hulk Hogan.
Joke slam. Call it for the joke slam.
Taking too much time.
Call him for the... Didn't you know this would happen?
Turn around.
Hall is up, and the giant has it. The giant pulls him in.
He got to get loose from him. WCW, where the guy's at, WCW?
Uh-oh.
See Nash out here now.
Nash.
Oh, my goodness.
Nash has the megaphone of Jimmy Hart's. And we're going to get a choke slam on Hall. There it goes.
Oh. He got him down. Watch out. Turn around, giant.
The referee trying to get Hall out. Nash gets kicked. The megaphone goes down.
Choke slam him.
He's going to choke slam him, too. There's the megaphone. Watch out.
There he goes. Oh, look at that.
The choke slam that gigantic Nash. Hogan's got the... He's got the one ton of belt.
Oh, he laid him out.
He laid him out with a
one ton of belt.
One, two, no.
We got a new champion. We got a new champion. We got a new champion.
Unbelievable.
Hogan's the winner. Hogan's the winner.
Hogan is the WCW World Heavyweight Champion again. Lex Luger's gonna rock him right now.
No doubt about it. He's got him backed up right here, going for the back.
Sting. Sting. Sting is out.
Sting is here, guys. All right.
Sting is out, holding him up. Sting hit Hogan. Oh, he hit Luger.
Luger.
He hit Luger in the back.
He caught Luger in the back. Sting hit Luger.
One, two, one.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh,
no. No.
Oh, my.
Sting hit Luger in the back. Oh, no.
Phenomenal.
see this on my life.
Jackknife Hollywood.
Savage is going to win it.
He puts Savage on Hogan.
Get Patrick up.
Here comes Bret Hart. Bret Hart with the... Oh! Bret Hart nails Big Sexy. What's he doing? What? My God, what's...
What is he doing?
Bret Hart pulled Hogan on top of Savage.
What's he doing?
Bret Hart, one,
two,
Hogan. Hogan wins the world title. You've got to be kidding.
Taking their time with each other.
Nash trying to get him to hook up at least by shoving the man in the corner. Let's see if that gets a reaction from Hollywood here. Well, he's been in so many big matches.
Well, he has.
What's that about? What's going on here? Here. Oh no!
The lights are gonna go off for Hogan!
And they do!
Oh! Chain, he's gonna retain his title! He's gonna retain it!
Referee did not see it. Chain wrapped around the fist of the Macho Man Randy Savage. Savage going in. One! Kevin Nash!
He is here!
Kevin Nash!
He's in the building!
He's in the house!
In Jacksonville!
He pulled the referee out! The former world champion!
Shutting him up!
From out of nowhere!
Kevin Nash, first sting, then Nash!
And now Hogan!
Where's the referee?
Hogan's
the
over!
The referee is right there!
One,
two,
three! We got a new champion! A new world champion! Hogan's done it again!
And this crowd is on their feet!
Oh my goodness!
Truly one of the most exciting, over-the-top, electric moments that we've witnessed on this program! Hogan does it again!
Not a person in their seats. This crowd is all on their feet.
And look at Hogan. He just realizes it now. He's the heavyweight champion of the world.
Hogan had the match won, quite frankly. Uh-oh. Hogan's trying to hook up here.
Yes, he is.
My God, can it be? Can you think it's gonna happen? Is this reality or is this a dream for Hogan? Is it perception of reality? Hogan now sending the game for the run. And he hit it again. Hogan with a big foot. The big leg drop. And the leg drop did not score. The game aborted the leg drop on that occasion. Hogan going to the well a second time, but the game aborted contact. And Triple H going downstairs. Draw Triple H, loading Hogan up. Oh, the pedigree. Hogan's head, his face through the canvas with a pedigree. This one is going to be over. Triple H is, oh my God. The Undertaker just has struck the referee.
What the hell?
The Undertaker just struck the referee right in the head.
I don't think the referee knew what hit him.
The Undertaker didn't want Triple H to win this match. Oh, man! God almighty! Triple H knocked down, and look at the Undertaker. He's pulling Hogan over to cover Triple H, and Hogan says, hell no! I don't want your help! I don't need your help!
Look at this!
Hogan scores to the right hand. Look out here!
Now!
The leg drop! Hogan got the leg drop! The referee's there! There's a count! Hogan has done it! My God! My God, he's done it!
And new undisputed World Wrestling Federation!
All right, episode 512, Turnbuckle Throwbacks. It's your boy, Philly Rea, doing our tribute to the late, great Hulk Hogan. Hulkamania will live forever in our hearts and our souls of every wrestling fan that's probably over the age of 30. Okay, so with that being said, I literally, as I was taking this break before and coming back, I got a little tidbit I mentioned before about Bubba the Love Sponge and all that. So apparently, Bubba was actually correct and Hogan was in dire straits. Apparently, he was in kidney failure, fluid overload. He had some complications from a surgery he had. But again, his camp was denying anything, and so, you know, God, his publicist should win an award. So this is what I'm reading now. So apparently he's been in bad shape for a minute. So that for people who were close to him. So Bubba was actually right. But even still, like, I don't know, the way it happened, it was just shady, you know. I'm not a big fan of that guy anyway. In March of 94, Hogan began making appearances on WCW TV. With Mean Gene, who was now over there as well, in WCW. He was on a set of Thunder in Paradise, doing his Thunder in Paradise show. And he signs to wrestle Ric Flair on an episode of WCW Saturday Night. And Hogan tears his contract up. His Thunder in Paradise contract and said he's now willing to quit the show, return to wrestling. Mean Gene issues the telephone survey on the 909-9900. Please don't call that line. On June 11th, 1994, Hogan officially signs with Ted Turner's WCW in a ceremony that was held at the Disney MGM Grand Studio, MGM Studios. I know that because on that day, I was going to one of the greatest hardcore shows of all time. It was a Biohazard record release party at the Roseland. And I saw Madball and Crown of Thorns and Marauder and a bunch of other folks. But I went to my friend, my childhood best friend, Eric Terzo. I went to pick him up at his house. And I was waiting for him to get done getting dressed. And I was on the couch and I put WCW on. And there it was. So that day stands out for me because I just... June 11th, I vividly remember where I was, who I was with, and on the way to the venue, we kept saying, holy shit, Hogan's in WCW, like, it didn't even seem right, it didn't feel right, like, what the hell was Hulk Hogan doing in WCW, like, this little promotion, like, this little regional, formerly NWA, like, you know, Jimmy Hart is his manager now, and Hogan does, of course, defeat Ric Flair for the championship at the Bash of the Beach. Hogan continues his feud with Flair. I should have mentioned this before in the first part, but in 91, Hogan and Flair had a bunch of matches. I was at the Garden for the first one, and it was, the crowd was into it, but apparently it didn't sell other ways in other cities, so, you know. He continued his feud with Flair at one of the Clash of the Champions. This culminates in a cage match with Flair's career on the line. Mr. T comes back as the special guest referee. Hogan wins that. Hogan headlines the Starrcade event in December by defeating the Butcher, who's Beefcake. The next feud was against Vader. At Super Brawl, Hogan wins by DQ with Flair's interference, who returns from retirement. He defeats Vader again in a non-title match, leather strap match, and Uncensored. But because of the controversial ending, once again by Flair, Hogan's feud with Vader culminates in a steel cage at the Bash at the Beach, where Hogan won by escaping the cage, successfully defending the World Championship against the likes of Big Bubba Rogers, Lex Luger on two separate occasions on Nitro. Nitro starts in September of 95. That's just to combat Monday Night Raw. The October 9th, 95 broadcast of Nitro was Hogan's first appearance in the all-black attire. Hogan feuds with the Dungeon of Doom, leading to the War Games match of Fall Brawl with Hogan's team of Lex Luger, Randy Savage, and Sting. Hogan's reign as champion is, at that point, the longest in title history, 460-something days. It ended when he lost the championship to the Giant at Halloween Havoc. Following the loss, the title becomes vacant. New champions to be crowned in a 60-man, three-ring battle royal thingy called World War III, where the Giant cost Hogan the title. This led to another steel cage match between Hogan and the Giant at Super Brawl, where Hogan won to end the feud. In early 96, Hogan reforms the Mega Powers with Randy Savage to feud against the Alliance to end Hulkamania, which culminates in another uncensored Doomsday cage match that Hogan and Savage won. Now, 1995 going into 96 was, again, a weird time for wrestling. WCW now has Hogan. They bring Savage in. They bring Kevin Sullivan back, who's booking, and they have Dungeon of Doom. Matt Squires' favorite angle of all time, which is still baffles me, but I digress. To each his own, I guess, right? It's a weird time. Vince is having a hard time. He's having a hard time. The gimmick thing is not working for him. The Cowboys, the Indians, the Bret Harts, the Shawn Michaels, the Undertakers, they ain't working. He's got Monday Night Raw, but it's not working. Okay? It's not working for him. WCW needs something. Hogan's getting booze. He's not the say your prayers, train, eat vitamins guy anymore. It's like he's wearing all black and he's got an attitude. And something has to happen. He gets approached to turn heel and agrees to it. Now, at that time, as is told by Eric Bischoff, Hogan had basically all of his creative control of his character on TV. You know, these guys got these crazy contracts back then. You know, they have a certain amount of appearances a year and this, that, and the third and whatever, whatever. So Hogan decides to turn heel. Enter the Outsiders, Hall and Nash. They come on TV. They make some idle threats. They jump Eric Bischoff. They beat up a... Was it the Equalizer? What the hell is his name? His other name. He was one of the Destruction Crew. Mike Enos. Yeah, he was like the Equalizer or some shit like that. They beat him up too. They beat a bunch of guys up. And they start beating up Sting and Lex Luger. And so at the Bash at the Beach in July of that year, I'll never forget where I was. I was dating a really beautiful girl. And we were in her apartment. And her dad, old Spanish dude, knew I was into wrestling, and before I got to the apartment, he switched out his illegal cable box and put it in her room so we could watch Bash at the Beach, and I thought that was pretty cool. So after an afternoon of delight, I play this day in the back of my head, like every time I see Bash at the Beach, because I remember that was like the best day ever. I had great sex, great food. And then I watched wrestling in bed with this girl. And it was supposed to be a six-man tag. The Outsiders, and they have a third guy against WCW's, you know, the loyal team of Savage and Sting and Luger, right? But the third guy's not there. I'm like, what the hell? All of a sudden, Hulk Hogan comes down and makes the save. Well, go to make. Looks like he's making the save, and he doesn't. He turns. For the first time in nearly 15 years, Hogan's a bad guy. Last time he was a bad guy, he was the early 80s, right? So he cuts the promo, accusing the fans of underappreciating his talent and drawing power, and announcing the formation of the New World Organization. And then we were off to the races. This new stable was prominent for months and years. Hogan grows out the beard and dyes it black. he trades in the yellow and red for the black and white, calls himself Hollywood, won his second WCW Heavyweight Championship at Hog Wild by defeating the Giant. He sprays NWO across the belt, begins a feud with Luger, Giant. He teamed up with Dennis Rodman against for Bash at the Beach 97. And now they're destroying WWF in the ratings. The NWO was the hottest thing. And I'm talking t-shirts. I'm talking toys. And I'm talking like everywhere you went, you saw the NWO. There was a NASCAR that had an NWO. They had an NWO car. I mean, just everywhere. On August 4th of that year, which I think was 97, it's my birthday, an episode of Nitro, Hogan loses the title to Lex Luger by submission. 5 days later at Road Wild, Hogan wins the title back. Hogan then loses the title to Sting at Starrcade in December of that year. And then WCW at that point just got Bret Hart, who came out and accused referee Nick Patrick of fast counting for Hogan and restarted the match with himself as the referee. Sting does win by submission. After the match, following that night on Nitro, Sting controversially retains the title. The championship becomes vacant. Sting goes on to win the vacant title again against Hogan at Super Brawl. Hogan develops his rivalry with his former friend Randy Savage, who just cost Hogan the title at Super Brawl, hitting him with a spray can. The feud culminates in a steel cage match. Savage took the title from Sting at Spring Stampede. Hogan teams up with Nash to take on Roddy Piper and the Giant in a first ever bat match. This is where it gets really crazy. And I don't know if I want to go. I mean, there was Karl Malone gets involved with DDP and Rodman comes back and Goldberg is now this unstoppable force. And then the NWO splits into the Wolf Pack, which is the black and red with Nash. They feuded with each other. It was crazy. And so by 1998, this is all going down, right? And, you know, and then WWF gets the momentum, WWE, and it's Stone Cold, it's The Rock, it's Mick Foley, Triple H, and like, now you're flipping back and forth, and the wars are like they're a couple of years in, and you just can't get, you know. Then at one point, it just dies. The NWO just falls apart. WCW falls apart. Bad contracts, bad booking. Vince Russo, like it becomes a shit show. Yeah, so it's 98, and it's a shit show. Hogan goes on the Jay Leno show and says he's retiring. And he's going to start running for president. There's campaign footage on Nitro, and it was a publicity stunt to draw some hype about Jesse Ventura, who won the governorship of Minnesota. Hogan takes some time off, returns in January of 99, challenges Kevin Nash for the world title. Hogan won for the fifth time, but it was a scandalous, the finger poke. And then they reunite. They begin feuding with Goldberg and the Horsemen. And then, like, the shit years, you know. It's like Hogan loses the title to Ric Flair at Uncensored in the cage. It was 99, I think it was. Hogan was severely injured in a Texas Tornado match for the World Championship, featuring him, DDP, Flair, and Sting at Spring Stampede. Hogan comes back as a face on July of that year. For the first time in 3 years, accepts an open challenge from Savage. They go back and forth. August of that year, Hogan started to dress in his black and white backstage with his son came out in traditional red and yellow for his main event. Hogan then defeated Nash in a retirement match at Road Wild to retain the championship. And, of course, here's the injuries. frustrations go, he was absent from TV in October of that year, from October of 99 to February of that year. In his book, he said that he was asked to take time off newly hired creative booking Vince Russo, was told not to, that he would not be brought back at that time. Despite some reservations, he agreed to do so. On October 24th at Halloween Havoc, Hogan was to face Sting for the title. Hogan came out in a ring in street clothes, laid down for the pin, and left. And then soon after that was Bash the Beach. Hogan was involved in a controversial work with Vince Russo. Hogan was scheduled to challenge Jeff Jarrett for the title. Before the match, there was a backstage fight between Hogan and Russo. Hogan wanted to take title, but Russo was going to have Jarrett win, but then lose to Booker T. Russo told Hogan that he was my notes here, going to have Jarrett lie down for him, simulating a real conflict. Although Jarrett was not told it was a work, when the bell rang, Jarrett laid down in the middle of the ring while Russo threw the championship belt in the ring and yelled at Hogan from the ringside to pin Jarrett. Hogan was very confused, put a foot on Jeff's chest after getting the microphone, telling Russo, "This is your idea, Russo? That's why this company is in the damn shape it is, because of all the bullshit like this." After winning and being announced as the new champion, Hogan immediately took the title belt. Moments later, Russo returns to the ring angrily, proclaiming that this would be his last time the fans would see that piece of shit in a WCW stadium. This also was when the public discovered that Vince Russo had, through Russo that had the creative control clause that Hogan had, which meant Hogan can control what happened to his own character, like I mentioned before, without anyone else telling him. In Bash the Beach shoot promo, Russo said that he was arguing with Hogan all day prior to the event in the back because he wanted to use the clause in a Jarrett match, saying that means that in the middle of the ring, when Hogan knew it was bullshit, he beats Jeff Jarrett. So Hogan refused the job to Jarrett. A new WCW championship was created, setting a stage for a title match between Booker T and Jeff Jarrett that night. As a result, Hogan files a defamation of character suit against Russo. It was eventually dismissed in 02. Russo claims the whole thing was a work. Hogan claims that it was a shoot. Bischoff agreed with Hogan's side of the story when he wrote that Hogan's winning and leaving Russo with the belt was a work. Russo coming out to fire Hogan was unplanned, which led to a lawsuit filed by Hogan, which was the last time you saw him in WCW. And Hogan makes his return to WWE. February of 2002, he returning as the leader of the original NWO with Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. They get into a confrontation with The Rock, costing Stone Cold the chance to become the undisputed champion against Chris Jericho in a main event. The NWO feuds with Austin and The Rock. And on February 18th, episode of Raw, Hogan accepts Rock's challenge at WrestleMania 18 on March 17th. Hogan asks Hall and Nash not to interfere, wanted to defeat The Rock by himself. Despite the fact Hogan was supposed to be a heel in the match, the crowd cheers him on. It's one of the best WrestleMania matches of all time, actually. You should watch that. The Rock clearly wins the contest, but befriends Hogan at the end of the bout, helping him fight off Hall and Nash, who were upset by Hogan's attitude, new attitude anyway. After the match, Hogan turns face, siding with The Rock, though he continued wearing the black and the white tights for weeks. After WrestleMania 18, he resumed wearing a signature red and yellow. During this period, the Hulk Ruse logo comes back out with the shirts. Hulk still rules. They had that shirt. It was crazy. For a time, he was still known as Hollywood, using the Voodoo Child entrance music he used in WCW. On a March 25th episode of Raw, Hogan was drafted to SmackDown as part of the inaugural draft lottery. On April 4th of SmackDown, he began a feud with Triple H. He defeats Triple H for the Undisputed Championship at Backlash on April 21st, thus becoming the last ever WWF champion, as a legal battle with the World Wildlife Federation finally cleared and they changed to WWE. In May, at Judgment Day, Hogan loses the title to Undertaker. After losing a number one contender match for the championship to Triple H on a June 6th episode of SmackDown, Hogan begins feuding with Kurt Angle, resulting in a match at King of the Ring, which Angle won by submission. On July 4th, Hogan teamed with Edge to defeat Billy and Chuck to capture the WWF Tag Team Championship for his first Tag Team Championship title in WWE. celebrated by the wave of American flags, overjoyed. Hulk Hogan's theme song, Real American, blah, blah, blah. They lost to Bell City Un-Americans, Christian and Lance Storm, and Vengeance. Hogan was used in an angle with Brock Lesnar, culminating in a main event singles match on the August 8th of SmackDown, which Lesnar won by submission. Lesnar became only the second wrestler to defeat Hogan by submission, and the first to defeat Hulk Hogan by having a match called. Following the match, Lesnar continued to beat Hogan, leaving him bloodied and unconscious in the ring. As a result of Lesnar's assault, Hogan went on hiatus till 2003, shaving off his black beard, dropping Hollywood, battled The Rock, who was once again a heel at No Way Out. He defeated Mr. McMahon in WrestleMania in a street fight. After WrestleMania, he returned as a masked Mr. America character, who, despite sounding and sounding like Hulk Hogan, denied he was the Hulkster. Mr. America used Hulk Hogan's Real American as his entrance, used all his moves. He was subject to a storyline that took place after Hogan was forced by McMahon to sit out the rest of his contract. A WWF pre-debut push took place with the mysterious Mr. America promos airing for weeks on SmackDown. There was also an on-screen discussion with SmackDown between GM's Stephanie McMahon and the concerning of her hiring Mr. America on a May 1st episode of SmackDown. He debuts on Piper's Pit. They brought Piper's Pit back for a few minutes. McMahon appeared, claimed that Mr. America was Hogan in disguise. Hogan shot back by saying, "I'm not Hulk Hogan, brother." The feud continued for a month with a singles match between Mr. America and Hogan's old rival, Roddy Piper, at Judgment Day at May 8th, where he won. His last appearance was on June 26th of SmackDown when the Big Show and the world's greatest tag team, Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, defeated Brock Lesnar, Kurt Angle, and Mr. America in a six-man tag. After SmackDown went off the air, Mr. America unmasked to show the fans that he was indeed Hulk Hogan, pointing his finger to his lips and telling fans to keep quiet about a secret. The next week, Hogan quits due to frustration with the creative team. On July 3rd of SmackDown, Mr. McMahon showed footage of Mr. America unmasking and fired him. Although Hogan already quit in real life. That was pretty cool, though. It was later revealed that Hogan was unhappy with the payoffs for his matches, and after his comeback under the Mr. America gimmick, McMahon terminates the contract and storyline. Hogan went back to New Japan, actually, in 2003. He defeats Masa Chono at Ultimate Crush in the Tokyo Dome shortly after he left WWE. Then Hogan goes to TNA. Until about 2005, returns again to WWE in 2005 at SummerSlam. In 2005, he was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame by his friend Sylvester Stallone. Hogan comes out to rescue Eugene at WrestleMania 21, who was attacked by Muhammad Hassan, and that build up, the Hall of Fame induction and whatnot. At the following week on Raw, Shawn Michaels approached General Manager Eric Bischoff demanding a handicap match. Bischoff refused, but told Michaels if he found a partner, he'd be granted a tag team match. So Michaels then pleaded with Hogan to team up with him. That happens. Michaels accepts the offer, and they beat Daivari and Hassan. So there you go. And Hogan appeared on the 4th of July, Hogan appears on Raw as a special guest of Carlito on his show Carlito's Cabana. And after being asked questions about his daughter Brooke, Hogan attacked Carlito. Kurt Angle then appeared, making comments further upsets Hogan. Later that night, Hogan and Michaels defeat Carlito and Angle in a tag match. During the post-match, Michaels performs Sweet Chin Music on Hogan and walks off. That sets up WrestleMania. Then it sets up a match at SummerSlam. Hogan wins the match. After the match, Michaels extends his hand to him, telling him that he had to find out for himself. And that was pretty corny. But prior to Mania 22 in 06, Hogan inducted his friend and former announcer Mean Gene into the Hall of Fame. Returns to Saturday Night's Main Event with his daughter Brooke. During the show, Randy Orton flirted with Brooke and later attack Hogan in the parking lot. He challenges Hogan to a match at SummerSlam. Hogan wins. This is Hogan's final match for wrestling in WWE. Although we had negotiations for a match against John Cena at WrestleMania 25, that fell through. He went to Memphis. There was a Hulkamania tour after the fallout with McMahon. Hogan lures Memphis wrestling with promoter with the proposal of wrestling Jerry Lawler. The match is promoted on Memphis TV. On April 12th of 07, Lawler announced at a news conference that WWE had barred him from wrestling Hogan. So because of his contract with them, and this goes on and on. There's a lawsuit. The whole Memphis thing was a shit show. And then I mentioned in July of 2015, there was an anti-black rant made by Hogan on a leaked sex tape recorded in 2007. In a recording, he's heard expressing his disgust with the notion of his daughter dating a black man, referenced by repeated use of the racial slur. You've heard it, right? Hogan also admitted to being a racist to a point. And once these recordings were public, there was a media scandal. There were wrestlers who worked with FWCW that confirmed Hogan was never given, you know, Hogan, they just denied it. They, you know, Hogan was never a racist, da, da, da. So he was, I don't know. It got really shitty, you know. He had a deal with Mattel for figures. They killed it after that. Hogan does give an interview, though, on ABC, and he just pleads for forgiveness, and, you know, just the N-word was a term that was used liberally among friends in Tampa, he said. Former neighbors dispute the claim. Like, it, you know, it goes, people advocating for him, The Rock, Dennis Rodman, Booker T, Kamala, Virgil, Mr. T, all his friends, Mark Henry, Big E, but he makes another return in 2018. He was reinstated to the Hall of Fame. He was invited backstage for the Extreme Rules thing, and he appeared in 2019 to tribute his longtime friend Mean Gene, who passed away. He was inducted. Hogan inducted his Megamaniacs partner Brutus Beefcake to the Hall of Fame in 2019. Made a surprise appearance at the beginning of the show along with WrestleMania with Alexa Bliss. That's when he incorrectly referred to the Superdome as the Silverdome, because he thinks it's 1987. This goes bad. So Hogan made a bunch of appearances up until 2020. He was supposed to come back again, but the pandemic screwed that up. And he did a Legends thing in 2021. He was going to co-host WrestleMania 37 with Titus O'Neil. And in 2023, he appeared alongside Jimmy Hart for the WWE Raw 30 show, which I was at, and they celebrated the 40th anniversary of Hulkamania with Hogan appearing in a pre-taped footage of earlier this year. Hogan made a live appearance during Raw debut on Netflix, once again being accompanied by Jimmy Hart, advertising his beer, which would be his last appearance before he died. So I basically ran down what I found on a couple of articles, and, you know, you can't really go by Wikipedia, because Wikipedia, a lot of times is, so some of the stuff I got from Wikipedia, because I knew it was true, like, I didn't have to, some of the stuff I cross-referenced and got other things, and, you know, I was going to do all this other stuff, I didn't want to play all these clips and stuff like that, because, like I said, you could, this is 40 years of a career. I would love to go through, like, I might do a Hulk Hogan match episode where I just pull different matches of his and we'll just cover them and in depth and go, because, I mean, the influence is insane. Like, nothing, like I said in the beginning of the show, nothing exists without Hulk Hogan. Nothing. None of the fanfare you see on TV, none of the pyrotechnics, the production, none of this is possible without McMahon bringing him in. Period. That's just how it is. There's no debating it. There's no denying it. Whether he's a racist or not, whether he's a terrible person behind the scenes, whether he put himself over with creative control in WCW, whether he treated people badly, all that stuff, for me, does not count in terms of him being a performer and what his contribution to the game. As much as I didn't like him as a character, I have to give him his flowers. I have to. And you'd be silly if you didn't. You'd be silly if you didn't. This life now, this society now, is real big on pointing out everyone's flaws, right? And because you have this media, social media platform, you have Instagram, you have Facebook, you have TikTok, you have Threads, you have what do they call Twitter now, X, you have all these platforms to post your opinions on and not giving a shit, right? But I learned something in therapy. You know, there could be two truths that exist in these conflicts. Like, yes, he was probably a racist. Yes, he probably was a shitty person outside the ring. And yes, he was a good performer. And yes, he was a pop culture phenomenon. There was nothing. When I was a kid, that's all you saw was Hulk Hogan figures, lunchboxes, school supplies, the cartoon. I mentioned rock and wrestling, but did I mention the cartoon? Oh my God! And then the voice was played by Brad Garrett, who Everybody Loves Raymond, and now more recently those Jimmy John commercials, the sandwich commercials. That was the voice of Hulk Hogan on the Rock and Wrestling cartoon. You didn't see Hulk Hogan had his own workout set. He had his own the whole Pile Driver album, the wrestling album when they recorded their own song. He was all involved in that too. Like, these are massive. Without this stuff, you wouldn't have figures. You wouldn't have place, you wouldn't have anything. It was that initial run of the LJNs, which they just brought back today at San Diego Comic Con. They're bringing them back. That Dusty Rhodes one looks great. I shouldn't even be buying stuff like that, but I'm gonna have to probably buy the Dusty Rhodes one. But I digress. You have to understand something. When pieces of your childhood die and you become I'm at midlife now, but even for the younger guys who, all like friends I have on social media who posted their love for Hulk Hogan, and you know, like, this is our childhood. This is our childhood. Don't mess with our childhood. You know, let us have it. Let us remember him the way he was, not as a racist, terrible person behind the scenes. Let us remember him for who he was. He was the immortal Hulk Hogan. Arguably the greatest performer of all time. Was he the best wrestler? No. Not by a long shot. Was he the best talker? Maybe top 10? Top 5 in some social circles, whoever you're speaking to. Depends on that. But you can't deny it. The whole reality show thing, if it wasn't for him, other reality shows probably couldn't exist, but that involved wrestlers or UFC guys or sports entertainment guys and, you know, stuff like that. This is a real big loss. Like, seriously. Like, I was upset over Orndorff, and I was upset over Roddy and Dusty and the Road Warriors dying and Bruiser Brody and other, you know, guys like that. My hero, Bam Bam Bigelow, was crushed when he died, you know. But Hulk Hogan dying is a big deal. I didn't want to do a memorial for Hogan because I didn't think he was going to die this soon. I thought he was going to live out my podcast. I figured he would die after I stopped doing the podcast. You know what I'm saying? So there we are. We're gonna rediscover this. We're gonna dive more into the Hulkster and pull out some of his best matches and maybe do some fantasy booking, do some fantasy warfare because it's important. Hulk Hogan's legacy is important, and I hope you guys go back and watch some of this stuff. Like anything from like 85 to like 90 is gold. Sports entertainment gold. Hogan was the top of the key right there. He was everything. Even when he wasn't champion, when he was filming movies, he was still involved. He was still doing stuff. He was still over with the fans. It was a deal, you know. So I hope I gave you some insight. I hope I did him his due diligence. I hope I gave him a good send-off because his character deserves it. The Hulk Hogan character deserves it. Maybe not Terry Bollea, but Hulk Hogan deserves it. As a pro wrestling fan, gotta give him his flowers. That's gonna do it for me. This is episode 512 of the Turnbuckle Throwbacks. You want to reach me, turnbucklethrowbacks1@gmail.com. Go to turnbucklethrowbacks.com for all your episodes. The Shining Wizards Network is my sponsor. They are amazing. They have a bunch of amazing shows, as, of course, with the Shining Wizards show as well. Support those guys. And I'm on Instagram, at TBuckleTBacks. Oh, no, that's Twitter, at TBuckleTBacks. I'm on Instagram as well. And of course I'm on social media as Phil Ray. Just look me up. And if you have any ideas about Hulk Hogan, drop them. Let me know. You guys are the best. I love you guys. Thank you for always supporting us. We do have a pro wrestling tee shop, prowrestlingtees.com/turnbuckle throwbacks. We have like 5 shirts on there. Go buy a shirt if you want to. If not, I don't care. But that's pretty much it, man. Take care of yourselves, each other. Be a good human. Be mindful. Be kind to animals. Be kind to old people. Just be mindful. Be a good person. Be better than you were yesterday. It helps. This world is a terrible place. Watch more wrestling. Be happy and watch more wrestling. All right? You guys be blessed. I love you guys. Take care. See you next time. Peace.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American. Fight for what's right. Fight for your life. Inside.
train, say your prayers, eat your vitamins, be true to yourself, true to your country, be a real American.